On Pilot TV this week, we're heading up north with Jodie Whittaker and Amy Lou Wood in Toxic Town on Netflix, being terrorised by Martin Compston and Anjali Mohindra's nightmare neighbour in Fear on Prime Video, and heading to Kingston with Tamara Lawrence in Get Millie Black on Channel 4. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to Pilot TV, your essential guide to every show that matters, and a podcast upon which I am joined by venerable TV critic, popular pundit, long-suffering Arsenal fan, and regular attendee at celebrity gatherings, Boyd Hilton. How are you, Boydie?
I am relieved that you finally managed to record the introduction after, I think, possibly a record number of attempts.
I don't know what you're talking about, and yeah. Neither does anyone listening to this
podcast.
Well,
they will now, because I've just told them.
Put it like this, James fell apart spectacularly. Yeah. He's got the giggles.
Yeah.
And also, join with us, you just heard her, is power napper Kay Ribeiro.
Mm.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm feeling refreshed.
Yes.
I had a 20-minute power nap before I came, and yeah.
So what? Was it literally 20 minutes?
Yeah.
Did you allow yourself 20 minutes, or did you only manage to nap for 20 minutes?
No, I actually Googled what's the optimum time for napping, so you don't feel too... It's between 20 and 30, and I had to get the train to come here, so I thought...
And I've always struggled with this. How do you...
Set the alarm.
How do you know how long it's going to take you to fall asleep?
What'd you say?
It might take you an hour to fall asleep.
No, I'm an instant... I mean, if... I could just sleep here now.
Do it now. Go on.
No, I could. As we know that Boyd finds your voice very soothing.
That is true.
So I could as well.
I'm a bit ASMR.
I don't think it's specifically
you're
James's
A-R-S-E.
Voice. It's the podcast as a whole.
James, just the Empire podcast is quite boring.
You like to think it's your voice,
right?
It's not because it's boring. It's
soothing.
It's comforting.
It's long. What it is it's long because
talking about Empire podcast.
Yeah. Chris, you overbooks three guests. Although last week there was only one. I didn't notice.
And this week.
And this week as well. So it's more like, I know it's going to be a substantial listen, and I'll fall asleep roughly halfway through with lots of people chatting away. It's fine. Then I do listen to it in full, as I've explained before, afterwards, so I get the...
Well, hopefully our listeners won't fall asleep during this very long intro.
They might do. Well, yeah. Do you know what? Shall I wake them up with a bit of exciting news?
Yeah.
Okay, here is my exciting news. Pilot Plus, you may have heard of it. Available for £3.49, the price of 2.5 saurine malt loaves. This is, obviously, this particular podcast, but completely free of ads, plus early. And it was 12 hours early. So instead of 5 p.m., you got it at 5 a.m. I brought it forward again. It now goes live at midnight.
Oh, I thought you had.
Midnight.
Yeah, because I had really early messages for me.
That's right. So it now goes live at midnight on the dot.
I wonder what happened.
Because I'm being maverick. I'm giving them even more incentive to subscribe. They get it even earlier, 5 hours earlier than they did before.
If you're listening at midnight, please get in touch. I'd like to give you a shout out.
Yeah, that's it. Do that. Yeah. If you're a midnight listener, let us know. But also, you get the bonus episode every Thursday, also available at midnight. And you get special spoiler specials. In fact, we have a very exciting couple of... I'm not going to say what it is, because there's one I'm very excited about that we're going to be doing, a spoiler special coming out, which we have
a few
guests
for. Give
us a
clue. Come on, that's annoying otherwise.
No.
Am I involved, by the way? Because I kind of want to know.
You might be involved.
Well, of course he hasn't told you about them.
No, I haven't told you about it. No.
I just presume that meant I wasn't involved, but okay.
This is not the exciting news. People already know about Pilot Plus. The exciting thing is Pilot Plus will be available very, very soon on Apple Podcasts, which means you will be able to subscribe to Pilot Plus through Apple Podcasts. Now, I'm going to say, if you already subscribe to Pilot Plus via the platform that we have at the moment, supporting cast, don't cancel it. keep it on there. Not for any particular reason other than, let's just say, they take less of a percentage. So it is more beneficial to us if you keep it on the current platforms. Please don't shift it. But if it is more convenient to you, if you want to stay in the Apple ecosystem and you don't want to and you found the other one confusing, then this is a simpler way to subscribe. And you'll be able to see the episodes that you're missing in your feed. You just won't be able to listen to them unless you subscribe. So it's very exciting. I'm hoping to put it live this week, assuming I don't fuck it up.
And it will surprise no one that this is the first that Boyd and I have heard of it.
That is true.
Live admin.
Yeah, live admin. Why don't you guys like to save these revelations for the show so that you can experience it like the listeners?
And you're right, it was super exciting.
Yeah, yeah, good. See, Kay, look, he's woken up already.
I mean, with sarcasm.
Yeah. What have you been watching, Kay?
I've been watching a lot. So I have started Hack Series 3. Watched a couple of episodes of that. Absolutely loving it. Happy that Deborah and Ava have been reunited. So I'm going to continue with that. I've also finished Unforgotten.
Same.
I enjoyed it immensely. I thought it was great. But I think we might do a spoiler special or something, so I won't go into it. But
will we? Might we?
That's the first I'm hearing about it. Is it you, Boyd?
You have to say.
Will we do a one-off at the end?
Oh, we might. Oh, I see. Well, whatever.
Maybe we'll do a pilot plus chat. Yes, or like in the regular pilot plus episode, we will dedicate a section
to. Yes, because there's been
the
a bit of chit chat
of,
you know, spoiler specials and what we should do, and you know, we've had some feedback. So I thought we could just give the listeners what they want with a little bit of chit chat about the Unforgotten.
We have to fit it in with the fact that we're doing with the White Lotus spoiler special discussions.
Hang on.
Every week.
We made no commitment to doing it every week. We just did the first.
It's the most talked about show on TV. We cannot carry. We have to carry. People want the.
Okay, I don't know about you. That's the first time I'm hearing about.
This is popular demand. No, this is the first.
I'm just happy listeners can realise how shambolic our organisation is.
One spoiler special, then drop it, then do another. I quite like the fact that we're like maverick, unpredictable, crazy people.
We do Severance 1 week. We do the White Lotus the next week.
No,
who knows what we'll do the week after?
It's too confusing. I hereby step in as producer.
Wow.
And insist that we do carry on doing the White Lotus. I'm sure we could do a special chat at some point.
I'm quite impressed by this. He never gets like this until, you know, but when he does, he's serious. So, yeah, okay, we're doing it then. Yeah. White Lotus.
But what I would say is we should talk about, because I was going to talk about Unforgotten as well. And do you remember when James, controversially, do you remember there was a little bit of a spat, I think, which mainly between you two, because he said something about...
I did.
You watched it weeks ago, didn't you?
Oh, yes.
Weeks ago,
yeah.
Yes.
And he said something about the ending and the solution and the whodunit. No, you didn't.
Well, so it wasn't the ending. I made reference to one of the themes of the show that I wasn't entirely on board with, and Kay...
No.
Laid into me.
Well, wait. I'll tell you how it went down.
This is like Pulp Fiction, different versions of the same event.
James was talking about a strand of the show that didn't play a part in the crime. Like it was irrelevant to it.
Into the whodunit.
It didn't play. You know, it wasn't significant. And I said, I don't think you should say that because it's you know that's going to ruin it for viewers. And so I believe we took the audio out. And
I
thought I served the community by standing up.
Oh, so was there no reference to this at all in the finished podcast?
No,
I think there was definitely some unforgotten chat, because I talked about
but
it.
Not
in what
that
we've
strand
been
that he was
but,
talking
yeah.
about.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, actually. I think it did. I think all the strands had an effect on the result, if you like.
Well, do you know what? You should save this for the apparent spoiler special that we're doing.
Well, no, but I'm just going to discuss it to this extent, that for me, I thought it was very successfully, all the different themes that we talked about, how it's addressing lots of stuff that's going on in the world right now, were in their own way, not in a forced way, but they were all fairly relevant to what went on in the end, I think, without wanting to spoil anything. And what I would say is, I did guess the outcome, if you like. I did guess who did it, effectively. Not the detail of it. But about halfway through the series, I thought, oh, it's probably that person.
He's looking for praise. Give him
no,
some
no,
praise,
no,
James.
No, not at all. No,
well
no,
done,
no.
Boydie.
No, I think
Congrats.
This is the first time I've done it. That's happened in the history of the show. I've forgotten, like, six series in, I finally worked out who did it. But it is a bit of a... We should do a spoiler special chat about it, because there's a lot to discuss about that, I think, about the explanation in the end. So, yeah, I'm trying not to spoil it, but... Yeah, it's interesting.
Okay, so we've both confirmed that we're doing a White Lotus spoiler special every week, and we will do something on Unforgotten, apparently.
Well, you know, he's already lined up two other spoiler specials.
I mean,
so, yeah,
sure, sign up to Pilot Plus, possibly on Apple Podcasts, however you want to do it. Anyway.
We should get Sanj or, someone...
Sinead
or...
close personal friends with Sinead, so yeah.
Yeah, and Sanj to some extent. We should get them on.
Pull your finger at them.
Okay.
Right, what else have I been watching? Envious on Netflix. It's a Spanish language drama about a late 30/40-year-old who thinks her life is going one way, marriage, kids, etc. And then it goes completely the other, and it's how she handles it.
What's it called?
Envious.
Envious?
Yeah.
Spanish?
Yes.
Is that the English title or is that the title? Is envious a word that Spanish people would recognise in and of its own accord?
Enviosa. I'm pretty sure it's called Envious.
Okay.
On Netflix. Also on Netflix, I have watched Running Point. So you may... That's the Mindy Kaling...
controversial.
Why is it controversial?
It's had some middling reviews, I would say.
Well...
Yeah, middling to poor reviews.
Right.
Yeah.
So, let me just tell you what it's about. It's Kate Hudson plays Isla Gordon, who is appointed as president of the LA Waves, because her brother is forced to resign because he's involved in a scandal. Brother played by Justin Theroux, who is quite funny in this role. And she... takes on the role as president, and everyone doubts her abilities, even though she is a massive basketball fan because of the misogyny in the sport and the board and within her family. It's an underdog story. It's a bit like Ted Lasso in that way. I have to agree with the reviews. I mean, I like the idea of it. I like Kate Hudson and I like Justin Theroux in that role, but I think the script should have been sharper and funnier than it was. It's entertaining. I watched 3 episodes, but I won't watch any more.
3? Must be quite entertaining.
Well, they're quite short. but yeah, I was disappointed just because you expect a high standard from Mindy Kaling, and I didn't think it was as funny as some of her other works. So that's what I've been watching, James.
Boydie, can you top that?
Well, I can tell you that envious in Spanish is envidiosa.
Oh, envidiosa.
Envidiosa.
Sorry, I said envidiosa.
Well, you know, we'll allow
apologies,
it.
Apologies,
apologia. That's okay. What have I been watching? Well, yes, indeed. I watched Unforgotten. I watched in real time. And what I would say is, on top of what I said before, that I guess halfway through, I'm not trying to get, brownie points. I just did. And relating to your claims about it earlier, which we'll cover in the spoiler special, which will get the guests, the two main stars and the creator, who knows, we'll try, is that it underlined how what a great show it is, because it's also in news as well, of course, this show, because it's been recommissioned.
Yeah, it has been recommissioned.
Series, so you should take my news.
Sorry, it's all
Is he spoiling the spoiler specials in terms of what we're going to be doing, now he's spoiling my news.
Yeah, well, I think when it's one show and it's all connected, we've got to, we have to break the structure sometimes. But it has rightly been recommissioned. It's been another big hit. I think it averaged 6.7 million viewers, which these days is huge. But it's just the skill of the writing and the plotting and the establishment of character is still masterful in this show. Yep. They do such a great job with it. Because there's some quite, it takes some quite big swings, particularly this series, I think. James is looking at me slightly mad. why are you talking about this again? But yeah.
The wheels have come off.
No, yeah, but
the wheels were never on.
So it is, I watched it to the end and I thought this is still a brilliant show, an absolutely brilliant show. That's all I wanted to say. There we go, I've said it.
Can I just give you some facts? After 14 days of viewing, the first episode peaked at 7.4 million viewers.
Oh, there you go, yeah.
It's a huge
Even
hit.
Even higher than 6.7. What else have I been watching? I watched, you'll be excited to know that there's a new Channel 5 thriller coming up, which we may or may not have time to review. We'll see what
I'm sure we'll be very busy.
I'm laughing because I saw, he was watching it yesterday, so he goes, oh my God, I've watched something I really want James to watch.
Yeah, it's nuts. It's called The Au Pair.
When does it air?
It airs in a couple of weeks' time.
Okay.
I think it will be in the next week's chat about what we cover, yeah. So okay. We have to bear in mind. Yeah. It's a strip back to the strip across the week, four nights in a row format that Channel 5 knows and loves so well. And I won't say any more than that. It's The Au Pair. I mean, it's basically The Au Pair from Hell, as we've got the Neighbour from Hell later. We're reviewing, and this is The Au Pair from Hell. Yeah. So it's not
really, on my watch.
It's not giving anything away to say that. But it's nuts. And then, and I have watched already, which we're definitely going to review next week, is Adolescence, which is the new Stephen Graham, Jack Thorne, it's written by the two of them together. Stephen Graham's idea. It's directed by Phil Barantini, who directed Boiling Point, the film, and a couple of episodes of the TV spin-off. And of course, Stephen Graham was in the film Boiling Point and the TV spin-off. And the whole thing is, each episode of the show, I'm not reviewing it, this is not breaking any embargo, and I'm not going to spoil it for when we review on the show. All I'm explaining is the format is fascinating because it covers an hour, each of the four episodes, in the story, if you like, and each episode plays out in one shot, in a one-er, as they're called. And I'm trying not to make any value judgment just because I don't want to spoil our own review of it.
That's fine. We discussed that because they showed us some clips at the Netflix event.
Yeah, but it's a really, I'm going to use the B word, bold undertaking for sure. And it's got a fascinating cast. The story basically is about a 13-year-old boy, Stephen Graham's character's son, is accused of killing a girl from his school. In a horrendous kind of stabbing incident. And it's very intense.
Is it like Defending Jacob?
It's a bit like defending Jacob, yeah. It's very...
The one shot's going to add to the intensity, isn't it?
Yeah, oh God, my God, yes. Well,
James, you're not going to be able to cope. That's what I'm saying.
This seems entirely possible.
Yeah, it's going to be... That was, the final thing I was going to say was, James needs to take a long run up.
Oh, God.
To this one. That's all I'm saying. Because, yeah, it's a lot.
Between that and the Channel 5 one, James having a good time.
Not being funny, this week was quite challenging for me, but we'll get onto that later. Yeah,
we are in challenging, gritty TV times, as I say. Not the magazine TV times, but... Gritty Times in TV.
Yes, TV Times being the gritty TV magazine.
As opposed to the Radio Times.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was quite an experience. And all I'd say is I was just going to watch the first episode, you know, because I had to write about it in He Magazine. And I absolutely watched the rest all in one go.
Four hours.
Oh,
yeah. Wow.
So we'll come to that next week, I assume. And that is pretty much what I have been watching.
Do you know what I've been watching?
No.
Mainly films.
Oh.
I know. For some reason,
you can't discuss them on here.
Yeah, I'm simply going to say I watched all the Bourne films, and I did a complete Bourne
Empire.
Rewatch.
Yeah,
although
yeah.
I skipped Legacy because obviously, I also watched both Knives Out movies.
I heard you talk about that as well.
Because we talked about it.
Yeah, yeah, he discussed it in front of us. Yes. Spat out his tea.
I can't separate what he's saying in this.
If you didn't, that would be really a really bad omission.
Yeah. Like, in this showcase or an Empire or just in real life, yeah. I can't separate
all the whole thing. There is a show that I've been watching though, which is will be no surprise to anyone. I barreled, rather than doing my traditional thing and waiting 3 to 4 years before doing it, I barreled straight into the fourth and most recent season of For All Mankind. So much so that I'm hoping to finish it so I can then listen to the spoiler special that you and Helen and someone else recorded for season 4 of that show. And it's great because they're catching up, obviously, decade by decade. Now that we're in season 4 and they're in the kind of noughties, it's basically now just a science fiction show. Like, it's not even like a historical alternate history. It's just, do you know what I mean? It feels, because they're just, and it's on Mars all the time.
Mm.
So I'm really liking it.
Do you get my theory that Elon Musk has just watched the show?
And basing his entire life on it.
Yeah. Every decision he makes upon For All Mankind.
There are certainly some familiar characters in the show. The only thing, no spoilers, because I know you've seen it all, but there's a brewing blue-collar rebellion sort of like happening. And I'm not entirely convinced by that at the moment. I am absolutely loving the stuff set in Moscow, though. Like, that's a brilliant thread. I think that's genius.
Yeah.
No spoilers for anyone like me who is taking 7 years to get up to date with For All Mankind. But it's such a good show.
Mm. When's the new series due? Do you know?
It's this year, isn't it?
I think it's this year. Yeah.
So this is going to be the very first time I will ever have been up to date when we get to review For All Mankind since the first season.
Well, I mean, thank the Lord for that, is all we can say.
So yeah, that's been my week, really. Films and For All Mankind.
Good for you.
Good for me, indeed. Excellent. Well, that's that section sorted then. Shall we move on to the listener question, Kay? What do you have for us?
I have a question from Rob Fraser, who says, okay, so I got hooked on the ludicrous but addictive Paradise, aka The Good Place meets The Parallax View, but I'm actually disappointed there's going to be a season 2. Feels like it should be one and done, even with all that literal world building. Are there any other shows you feel would have worked better as a single season?
That's a very good question, especially with regard to Paradise, because I had exactly the same response where I was really a bit disappointed when they said there were going to be a second season. So we've seen, well, it's about everyone, I guess, has seen the first 7 episodes at this point. It's only the finale that hasn't aired by the time this goes out. And
not everyone in the world.
Of course, but you're never going to.
No, I might do. Please don't.
Yeah,
okay, fine. So the finale, Boydie and I, I'm assuming you as well, I certainly have been given the finale, which I'm going to watch tonight. I'm very excited about that. And maybe I'll feel differently about it having a second season once I've seen the finale and how it ends. But I was kind of hoping it would be a little bit self-contained. But to go back to the actual question here, I mean, there are so many of them, aren't there?
I've got my one answer.
Okay, go.
Let's do Kay's traditional one and done.
One and done.
Come on.
One and done. Minimum effort,
what
Rivera. Go for it.
Answer?
There is only one answer.
Oh,
and it is.
Bold statement for me.
Yellow Jackets.
Yeah. No, I disagree. Like, that's not a show that... Because it's not a show that could possibly have worked as a single season, because it's obviously the whole thing is all set up.
Well, my interpretation of the question is, which show would you just like to be one and done?
Yeah, but one and done. Yeah, but if that had ended with the first season, like, it would have no resolution.
I guess what the question
is referring to is... When a show is almost...
Self-contained.
When a show feels like it's clearly been intended as a one... season.
As a limited series.
And then it becomes so successful that they commission a second one.
Okay.
And I don't think that's the case with Yellow Jackets, to be fair. Because it was always intended to be a returning show. Whereas, you know...
Well, all
James
I'll say is I've answered the question I wanted to answer.
I mean, that's all
just
that
not the one that was asked.
Yeah.
I mean, because otherwise Heroes or something would be a similar one, where the second season was terrible and it never really recovered. But you couldn't have just had the first one because, again, it didn't resolve anything. So.
No. But there are... But TV drama is history is replete with examples of shows that were only ever clearly supposed to be one series.
Like
and
what?
Then The Night Manager, right, which is coming back late this year on BBC One. That was based on a John le Carré novel. Mm. There was no sequel to it. He didn't write a sequel to it. It was just those characters. It's resolved. The ending is an ending, and now they're rebooting it. And they kept alluding to the fact that they probably would like to do a second series of it, but it was absolutely never intended to come back. And my examples, I think, you'll find, are all examples of that, which beginning with Big Little Lies. Now, I quite liked season two of Big Little Lies.
So did I.
It's fun, but it was nowhere near as good as season one.
It did have Meryl Streep in it.
It did. Streep was brilliant.
But it
brilliant.
Wasn't as good as series one.
It wasn't as good as series one. And you feel like it was an example of, do we need it? Don't we need it? It was fine. It was entertaining.
You enjoyed being in their company again.
Yeah, exactly. But it was a massive hit. Do you remember? It was a huge, huge... Everyone was talking about it in the same way. Everyone was talking about The White Lotus now, which is why we're doing spoiler special chats every week.
Are we?
And,
don't start that again.
Yeah. And it was just clearly always intended to be one series, a self-contained series. But they did a pretty good job in that case of creating the second series. Unlike 13 Reasons Why. Do you remember 13 Reasons
Why?
Yes. The controversial Netflix
team. Now, that was obviously based on a book. Yeah. Was there only one book?
I believe there's only one book.
Right.
I'm pretty sure.
Because they did, three seasons of that?
I think maybe even four. Was it four? Three or four.
Yeah. Also, the first season of that was a really hard watch.
Yeah.
And then they decided to double down on that for the second and third seasons.
Yeah, they did.
Utterly unnecessary.
Yeah, it was full on. And I really enjoyed the first series, but it was four seasons, yeah. But the second, even the second series was really forced and it was felt very contrived and... Again, because people were talking about it, it was very popular among its intended target audience of young people. But it was like, sometimes you should resist the thing.
Agreed.
Killing Eve.
That's on my list
Killing
as well.
Eve was, 100%. I remember very clearly when Killing Eve ended and everyone was like, oh, this is brilliant. It's just so well done. Everything about it is great. And then they went, and it's coming back. And everyone was like, do we really need to? And there was a lot of complaints at the time just by the whole idea of bringing it back when it felt very clearly intended to be a limited series. And each subsequent series had a different showrunner, if you remember. But it definitely none of them. It was on and off. Decent. The characters were fantastic and the cast was fantastic, but it never captured that Phoebe Waller-Bridge dialogue that made the first season so brilliant and special. Yes.
The rat and the Coca-Cola, Diet Coke.
Exactly, that legendary line, yeah. Mm. But all the dialogue was brilliant. It's easy to forget just how fantastic
she really did.
Yeah, she was amazing, yeah. By the way, isn't it amazing to think that with Fleabag and that, she hasn't really created another show.
No, but she's been working on a lot of films, hasn't
she? She's very busy. Mm. Of course, she was in Indiana Jones and the thing you watch it.
Yeah, punching up Bond films. She's done all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, she's punched up the Bond film, yeah. Yeah, but you think it's quite a long time now, isn't it?
I was thinking about that the other day.
Yeah, interesting. James, what's your answer?
I mean, God, lots of them. Do you know what? There was I had very strong feelings that Bad Sisters was going to be one of these, where I was like, at the end of that first season, I was horrified when I heard that was coming back. But actually, the second season is really good. If they come back with a third one, I'm going to set something on fire, because the second one has a really definitive and nice ending. It's like, all right, stop now, which I think they will. So that's good. What else would I say? You know what? There is an argument that Westworld could have just stopped.
Yes, I would have been happy with that.
I will say that I enjoyed a lot of the stuff that came after in Westworld, but they never regained the, you know, it became part of the zeitgeist, and it was such a big deal that first season, and it never ever regained those lofty heights.
No, I could have definitely done without the subsequent series, especially when it got so complicated, all the different timelines, and oh my God, it was exhausting.
Well, True Detective would have been an installment for this one, except Night Country now makes me feel that I can put up with two, and to a lesser extent three. Mm. When I say lesser extent, it's better than two. Because you get Night Country.
Yeah.
So that's kind of fine. Did you ever watch Wayward Pines with Matt Dillon?
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, it was really good. The second season of that was dreadful. Absolutely. Yeah. And he's not in it, crucially. Yeah. That was a horrible, horrible error. They should never have done it. So that would be on my list as well. Prison Break would be on my list. First season of that was brilliant. They, wait for it, break out of prison. And the second season, they are crucially not breaking out of prison because they are already out of prison, but it is called Prison Break and it still goes. And it went on for like, what, four seasons? Then it came back for a revival series. It's, I mean, just one series of that, please. It was great. Move on. Yeah. That was an upsetting one. And the only other one that I would say, and this may be slightly controversial, and I know I enjoyed season two of this, but you could put Squid Game in this bucket a little bit. Where Squid Game was a show that I'm not sure needed a second season. And I really enjoyed the second season of Squid Game. I really did. And I'm really looking forward to the summer when we get the third season. But that first season was almost perfect in and of itself. So maybe could have kind of been left as a curator. Like, I'm really pleased that we never got another Mayor of Easttown, for example, because, again, that's a show that felt... Well, yeah, that is the worry, isn't it? That I like that that's a standalone piece.
I mean, that could easily return.
It could, it being another case.
But without it being nearly as contrived feeling as, say, a Squid Game.
Right.
A Squid Game I agree with you, Squid Game. The second season just feels a bit much, a bit like they're really trying hard to
make it. What, you're going to go back and play this game again that really traumatised you?
And you're going through the same game all over again, but slightly, I mean...
It is good, though. It is good.
Yeah, no, it's great, It's much better than subsequent series of Westworld, for example. But it's still a kind of, like, reaching, isn't it? Whereas I don't think... the second series of Mary Easton would be completely, why the fuck not? She's got another case, it's about... When something's about a detective... It's much easier.
It's certainly from a narrative point of view, they wouldn't need to tie themselves in knots to do it. I think I think that's fair.
I think you'll find I'm right on this one.
Mayor of Westtown, that's what we'll be.
She's moved.
Well, that was the listener question. If you would like your question read out on this podcast, send them into k@pilottvpod on Blue Sky, on Twitter, on Instagram, or via the subreddit. Shall we move on to this week's news? And there's quite a lot of it this week. Now, a few things have happened. There have been a few deaths, actually, this week. Some of them, obviously, more in the film world. Gene Hackman, for example. Michelle Trachtenberg, though, very tragically really died. 39 years old. Obviously, Dawn from Buffy the Vampire Slayer, famous for Gossip Girl as well. But that was really sad news to hear this week. But there have been some good things that happened this week as well. Kay, I'm sure, was very excited to see the first trailer for season two of Andor. What did you think of that?
I thought it was top banana, James.
Yeah, I thought you would.
What do you think?
Do you know what? I loved it. I'm so excited about that show. It's going to be very high on my list of shows of the year. I'm pretty sure of that.
Top of the sofa list.
Behind the... do you know what? It's ahead of the sofa list. I need to see it now. I need it in my eyes. I'm so excited about it. And that trailer is so bold, you know, unusual for a Star Wars trailer to have that kind of musical accompaniment.
It really
me up, I would say.
I thought it was very good. Yeah, very exciting. It's Andor. Was Andor an example of a show that could have been... Was it ever intended as one season? No, it was probably...
No, it feels like it's bridging the gap. Yeah. Like, it's building up to Rogue One. So I feel it needed...
Right.
It needs more.
Yes. It looks fantastic. But Andor is one of the best. It's the best, isn't it? It's the best TV spin-off.
Within
the Star Wars universe.
Not just on TV, frankly, in some regards.
Right,
and I don't mean in total, but of the recent output, it's certainly been a high point. So. Yes.
And some good news for all Whovians out there. Doctor Who has got its date. It's going to air on the 12th of April on BBC One and iPlayer. They're going to be 8 episodes and they will air weekly. And also we found out that Alan Cumming will be guest starring. And apparently, Boyd, you'll know this, it's not the first time he's guest starred because he previously played King James I in a 2018 episode, The Witchfinders, apparently.
Well, almost more exciting than that, Kate, which I thought you were going to touch on, but you haven't, which is good because it means I can step in and cover it myself, is the fact that Roddy from Slow Horses, a.k.a. Christopher Chung, is going to be in Doctor Who as well.
That was from last week, I think, wasn't it?
No, it was only a couple of days ago, I think. We didn't cover it last week, did we? We didn't mention it in the podcast. Do you remember, James?
No, we didn't mention it, and you should mention it now, yes.
Okay, good. So, yes, it's exciting. Christopher Chung, and it says, Russell T. Davis says, I'm a huge fan of Slow Horses, and I was excited to get Chris involved. He brings all of his strength and style and talent to one of the darkest, toughest episodes we've ever made. So that's exciting.
I hope he's just playing Roddy Ho.
He's not just playing Roddy Ho, no. But I've mentioned before the story of the BAFTAs last year. I met him and he was an absolute delight. He's so funny. He's really funny. And when you meet him in real life, it kind of explains how he got the job because he's such a delight and he's got such a kind of like off-kilter sense of humour and way about him that no wonder he got the Slow Horses role and indeed subsequently the Doctor Who role. But yeah, very exciting Doctor Who news. Doctor Who news.
Doctor Who. Doctor Who.
Doctor Who news all round. Before it becomes really old, should we talk about the SAG Awards? Well, I mean, I stayed up till God knows what in the morning watching them.
So we have to justify that. Yeah, go on, tell us the highlights.
My highlights were Jane Fonda won the Outstanding Achievement Award, like the Lifetime Achievement Award, if you like, and she's in her mid-80s.
Wow.
And she is incredible. Like, she's completely looks and sounds and everything completely... Still the radical leftist firebrand, as she always has been. She's always been one of the most politically invested of all actors throughout her life and career. And she went and she made an incredibly long and yet brilliant speech. But what she did was she kept fiddling with the microphone.
Oh,
and
no.
It was so annoying, kind of endearing in a way, that she was just doing it without even thinking about it. And so when you fiddle with those mics, like one of those tall mics there, and everyone says at the beginning of all award shows, the producer or someone says, by the way, everyone, when you're accepting awards, you don't need to touch the mics. The mics are powerful enough to pick you all up. I've seen it so many times. Jane Fonda didn't give a shit. She just does. So she was grappling with the mic and like handling it and interrupting herself because sometimes she couldn't hear what she was saying.
That would have given me panic attacks.
Oh yeah, people like James and I was just thinking of the sound people, poor people, the producers going, just stop fucking touching the mic.
Come on, Jane, lips max, fucking hell.
Yeah, exactly. But who's going to tell Jane Fonda what to do? Not them, not anyone. But her speech was absolutely astonishing. Then it was a big night for Shogun. Which won Best Drama Series.
Anna got an award as
Anna
well.
Anna Sawai won. Yeah. Hiroyuki Sanada won. So it won across the board. It did brilliantly. But you know what did the big surprise on the night was?
What?
A show that we used to do spoiler specials for every week.
Only Murders in the Building?
Yes. Oh. Only Murders in the Building suddenly became the comedy of the year.
Another one that James opted out of.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's a great opt out from James. But it beat The Bear, famously
not a comedy.
Miscategorized, but still, The Bear has won every year so far. Abbott Elementary, the acclaimed, one of your favorites, Kay. Hacks, brilliantly acclaimed Hacks, and Shrinking. And yet Only Murders in the Building won. Now, I
think that's wrong.
Well, I have to say, as I'm a really big fan of the show, and I love Steve Martin and Martin Short, neither of whom were there, which was really unfortunate. I think they both got COVID.
One
of them got COVID from, like, there was a big event the previous week. I think it was the SNL, Saturday Night Live 50th anniversary.
Super spreader event.
Yeah, it was a super spreader event. So neither of them were there, and they didn't even, unlike, you know, I think in the BAFTAs they do it pretty consistently. If someone's not there, they'll have a filmed message or a read out a note or something.
Maybe they're too poorly.
There was nothing.
Yeah. So just poorly.
Other people from Only Murders just accepted the award on their behalf, and that was that. It was a real shame. Anyway, it beat. I think one of the strongest fields in all of awards is best comedy series, and it won. Only Murders in the Building won, and it also won. Martin Short won Best Actor. Best Actress was Jean Smart in Hacks, quite rightly. But yeah, a multiple winner was a big surprise of the night. Best Actor Limited Series, Colin Farrell for The Penguin. And that was a bit of a surprise, I would say. He was up against Richard Gadd, Andrew Scott for Ripley, Kevin Kline for Disclaimer. Because basically Colin Farrell was under massive amount of latex, etc. And it could have been anyone. That's my theory about it.
Could have been anyone.
I know. Jessica
He'll
Gunning.
He'll love to hear that.
He will. Jessica Gunning rightfully won for Baby Reindeer. But again, she beat Jodie Foster, our friend of the pod.
I mean, you're going to dine out on that for a while, aren't you? Yeah. I beat Jodie Foster to an award.
James, that's definitely going on LinkedIn.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, fair enough. And the best action performance for a stunt ensemble was won by Shogun as well, by the way. But yeah, I think it was an entertaining event, very well hosted by Kristen...
Bell?
Bell, thank you. I forgot her name there.
I think it's an absolute travesty that Only Murders beat Shrinking.
Well, you could say it's an absolute travesty to beat Hacks.
Yeah,
I think Hacks
was
probably the favourite because it got such across-the-board massive good reviews for the third season that you've just started watching, of course, which is brilliant. I didn't finish making that point, did I? It was a huge surprise, but even as a fan of the show as I am, I think it was weird that it won. And it was a return to form, this series, Only Murders.
Yeah, but
it's weird that suddenly it got...
That's not the category, Boyd, return to form category.
No, it's not, quite rightly, Kay. But so it was weird that it suddenly got the traction. Of course, this time, by the time people listening to this show, so this is going to drop on Sunday night at midnight, is that right then? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
I had to pause for a second there to work it out.
No, because it's not
well,
plus.
Well, technically midnight is Monday morning.
Right. But basically, as the Oscars get underway...
So for Pilot Plus listeners, yes, yeah. it will drop at midnight
right.
as we transition into Monday morning.
Right, which is when the Oscars are on.
Yes. The Oscars will be kind of starting. Yes.
Yeah, it'll be starting. So I was just going to say, the SAG Awards are like in the film sections, the preliminary run-up to the Oscars, and I'm very excited. This is not TV, but I'm just going to say it anyway. Timmy Chalamet could win.
Your mate, Timmy.
Yeah, my mate could win the Best Actor, because he did win at the SAGs.
He did.
And he gave a fantastic speech. It was like a weird cross between... I don't want to say boastful, but very like self-assured and saying that he wants to aim in front of all these incredible actors. Yeah. He wants to aim as high as the peak.
He wants to be one of the greats.
He wants to be one of the greats.
I like that he said that.
No, he did it. It was all in the delivery part. I've seen reports of it. People saying, what a twat, you know, what a self. But no, his delivery was like, actually, he's kind of being modest in a way. He's saying he wants to be like that. He's nowhere near that right now. And yeah, actually, he's so brilliant as Bob Dylan. He's quite near it, some would say, like me. So I hope he wins right now. In the Oscars, Best Actor. People listening to it will know in a few hours' time. Listen to this. There we go.
Now, do you want to brace yourself? Because there's like a slew of sci-fi news that I'm going to need to get off my chest.
Let me just set my timer for my
power nap. Yep. It's power nap. Yep. Okay, first of all, Alexander Skarsgård is going to be the lead in the Murderbot Diary. So this is based on Martha Wells' novels, which are apparently very good. I've never read them, but this is coming to Apple. So very excited about that because, you know, who doesn't love a little bit of
science?
The Murderbot Diaries. Yes.
Wow.
And if we're talking about adaptations, so Chloe Zhao is going to be producing an adaptation of Consider Phlebas, which is the first of Ian M. Banks' culture novels, which are very, very famous kind of seminal sci-fi series. So exciting about that as well. The less good, I would say, news in this sort of space is that Foundation is in trouble. Yes,
oh.
Kay, I'm so sorry to have to tell you this.
No.
So Foundation had two amazing series. A lot happened while they were shooting season three. We had the strike. There were some issues where the budget got scaled back. David S. Goyer was apparently unhappy that the budget was being scaled back. He has now departed the project. So season three, you know, he's directed some of those episodes. He's written those episodes. But he hasn't... He's essentially now left the series, so he will not be involved in season four. The Foundation has been rocked, exactly that. So season three I'm very excited about, but now I'm a little bit worried about its future. However, Ian Goldberg is taking over as showrunner for season four of Foundation. He is was the showrunner on Fear the Walking Dead, which is, I would argue, not the best Walking Dead strand, but let's not hold that entirely against him. But I think what really worries me is that I think David S. Goyer did such an incredible job of adapting this story. I mean, genuinely superlative. I can't fault anything he did with it. So it really worries me that he's now departing the series. And I fear for the Foundation future.
Don't worry.
Yeah.
Please don't worry.
A little bit concerned. Were either of you interested in any way on the John Lithgow news?
What is the John Lithgow news, please?
John Lithgow will be playing Dumbledore in the TV Harry Potter series.
Yeah, I think it's interesting, yeah.
Think it's good casting?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
John Lithgow, the Trinity Killer from Dexter, the murderer in Raising Kane.
Yeah, one of my favourite Brian De Palma films. He's also, he's in the current Oscar favourite, semi-favourite, I don't know what the
Yes, as another villain.
Conclave, he's in Conclave, he's fantastic in Conclave.
Dodgy Cardinal,
indeed. He's also in the West End, about to be in the West End, when the transfer of the brilliant play he's in, where he plays Roald Dahl, which is a fantastic piece of work.
Never a dull moment in that.
He played Winston Churchill, if you remember, in The Crown as well. He is an absolute giant of acting.
He's fantastic, yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's fair enough. He's got the stature, isn't he, John Lithgow? He's also kind of... He was at the SAGs, by the way, and I think he's got the reputation in Hollywood for being one of the nicest guys in the business.
While playing a lot of serial killers. Yeah.
I was going to say something then, which is going to open such a whole can of worms, I've decided not to say it.
Okay.
Let's just say it's about Harry Potter and casting. We'll leave it there.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Interesting.
Some news. Malpractice is coming back for a second series in the spring. There have been some first look pictures. So you might recall that is the series written and created by Grace Afuriata. And it's about the doctors from the medical investigation unit who are called to investigate malpractices. And this time around, The series sees Tom Hughes playing Dr. James Ford, who finds himself caught between an anxious new mother's postnatal checkup and the sectioning of a psychotic patient, and no one can predict the tragic outcome. He's a psychiatric registrar, so I'm looking forward to that.
Have we seen this?
I think we watched the first.
Yeah, we did. I have no recollection of it.
It was really good. Do you remember? Yeah.
Nope.
Yes, I think I hosted the
of course you did.
Launch Q&A. This was before K.
It's before K went freelance, yeah.
BK, as in the, you know, BC, before Christ, before K. I'm pretty sure I did host it, and it was Helen Bean and stuff. It's really good, yeah.
Yes. Jordan Kwame.
Hmm. Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to the second series. But I'm pretty sure we must have reviewed.
No recollection.
Also, I like the work of Grace Foriatis, so she did Playing Nice.
Right, yeah, she's very clever. But she used to be a doctor, didn't
yes.
she? So she's written this from her own experience and expertise. And maybe we were in a period where James was boycotting ITV drafts. I don't know.
We definitely reviewed it.
Yeah, we may well have done it. It's just, again, like I've said many times, my brain is currently in a one-in, one-out configuration. So every new show we watch, I have to eject knowledge of a previous show. That's just the way it works. Wow. That's just science, boys. You
Fair
can't argue
enough.
With science. Look, I have to announce a very specific thing because people will be wondering why I haven't mentioned it. Yes, The Last of Us Season 2 is airing on the 13th of April. The reason I haven't mentioned it before now is I kind of thought we already knew that, but apparently we didn't. But so we have a concrete date for the
when
best
was Doctor
show of the
Who
year.
Again? So that is it the same week?
Doctor Who is on the 12th of April.
Ooh, what a week!
What a week! Yes.
What a week! Something for you, something for me.
Yeah,
great.
No, I mean I like The Last of Us. As
and
well.
I like Doctor Who now.
Yes, you've been converted officially. Yeah.
So it's good news all around.
Yeah.
James, did you see the trailer for the new series, the fifth and final season of You?
I did. Well, I mean, it's interesting because it departs from the norm in that normally when you see the trailer for the new series of You, you'll see the new object of his obsession. Mm. Whereas in this, we don't, which makes me wonder whether the formula is taking another slight twist in this final season.
Do you want me to read you a little bit of the synopsis?
Go for it.
Netflix.
Hit me with it.
Picking up 3 years after Jo and Kate, played by Charlotte Ritchie, left London for New York City, Kate is now CEO of the Lockwood Corporation. Jo is her loyal husband who's been dubbed Prince Charming by the adoring public, and they're both following through on their pact to help each other do good. However, reconciling who Joe has been with who he wants to be is an ongoing project. And as the season unfolds, Joe will not only cross paths with Bronte, Madeline Brewer, who makes him reconsider his affluent life, but will also contend with his wife, Kate's siblings. Doesn't bode well for Kate's siblings.
No, I was going to say he might have turned over a new leaf and be absolutely fine, but that might be quite
not.
A dull series.
It'll be a surprising decision. Yeah.
He's a stand-up guy.
You, the normal years. Suddenly he's a normal, everyday guy. He's fine.
I delight in this show. It is one of the most wonderful guilty pleasures, and it's wonderful. But I really, really liked the previous season, which has been my favourite, actually.
Yeah, with the bonkers twist.
With that insane twist halfway through, which was just
one
wonderful.
One of the great twists.
Magnificent. Absolutely magnificent. I love you. You, not you, Boydie, but also you.
Oh,
also
thanks.
You. I love you and you.
Yes.
What about me? Paramount Plus has unveiled the title and premiere date for Guy Ritchie's new global organised crime series.
They did, yes, that's right.
Do you know what it's called?
I do.
Go on.
I've forgotten.
Okay. It's called, for everyone else,
fascinating.
It's called Mobland.
Mobland.
And it's going to premiere
Mobland.
It's going to premiere on Sunday, the 30th of March.
Mobland.
Mobland. Do you think, I read this story, and my first thought was, Guy Ritchie's so much stuff at the moment.
Isn't The Gentleman's coming back?
The Gentleman's
back,
going back, which he did on Netflix.
That's right.
He's doing stuff for Prime Video. He's still making like two films.
Yeah, he is.
Seemingly.
He's quite prolific.
He's so prolific. It's incredible. He makes Jack Thorne look like a lazy bone.
He's cornered the three star market.
He has cornered the it's quite entertaining market. Yes. I think The Gentleman was one of the best things he's ever done. I think I said that.
I like
not the film.
No, but the TV show.
The TV show's
yeah,
really good.
The TV
good,
show was four
stars. But
whereas,
I mean,
yeah, all the
anyway,
films are three.
Mobland has some good names attached to it, including Tom Hardy, Pierce Brosnan, and Helen Mirren.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you can't
no
argue with that cast list, can you really?
Yeah.
Okay, now that's good.
And
too.
Finally, in news that will excite James Dyer.
Right.
Why have you decided it's finally?
Apparently, Kay's calling time on news.
Because we need to wrap this up. I mean,
no,
now
I've got one new story I insist on adding. So
okay, because mine was a joke.
And nearly finally.
All right.
Go on.
Bullseye has been commissioned for a full season.
Yeah, of course.
Bullseye, of course, the Daredevil villain,
remember,
because Daredevil Born Again is coming and we're reviewing it on Pilot Plus.
But if you remember, weirdly, James is fully on board with Bullseye and does an impression, I believe, of Jim Bowen.
Still smashing lovely great, your money is safe.
See? Oh, no. I told you.
Don't let the commissioners hear that. They might reconsider their decision.
Talking of up north.
Send your hate mail to at James Dyer. No, go on. Boyd, what's your last bit of news then?
The last, this is industry shaking news, I believe. This is in some ways,
I know this story. This is that obviously Misha Collins and Jared Padalecki are joining the final season of The Boys, making it a supernatural reunion. I mean, it is pretty interesting.
You sneaked another new story in about
Is this about Ms. Moore?
Yes.
Go on.
Charlotte Moore is leaving the BBC. She is...
No more.
She is the chief content officer of the BBC and has been for many years. I mean, she's like that. That is the powerful position in creatively. She's in charge of all TV across the board, radio,
sport as well.
You know,
right?
Everything. Yeah, she's just been a huge part of the BBC recently. I think she's done a brilliant job. I've said before, I think on this podcast,
many ages ago.
She's brilliant because she's very supportive of the creative people, the creative talent that the BBC employs, and she's widely liked. And so it's quite, I think it's a huge, I think it's shaken the BBC. Basically, she's joining Left Bank Pictures, who are the people who make The Crown, etc.
Sony.
She's joined as creative director, blah, blah, blah. But that's a massive, massive thing. But I think in the TV industry, it shows you she's been in that, working at the BBC for years and years and years. And there is a sense that if, you know, you should move around, you shouldn't just stay in one place. And a lesson that perhaps me, I could learn. Having been at Heat for 26
years.
This is
how you're handing in your notice on the podcast.
No, of course not. I'll carry on. Yeah. But it's huge, huge news. Charlotte Moore, goodbye.
Okay, is that okay? Is that news? Are you calling time on news now?
We've wrapped it. Yeah.
We've wrapped news.
It's a wrap.
It for news. We've managed all the Bond stuff on the Empire podcast, and as yet, it does not impact TV directly, but it will.
Oh yeah, Mark, of course it will. Well, they have recommissioned that absolutely ludicrously terrible
the Brian Cox game show
thing. What was that called?
Road to a Million.
There you go. 007, I think it was Road to a Million. Yes, wasn't it? It was shocking. Yeah,
he was just thinking of the money.
I believe Brian Cox has been very open about that.
Yeah, he did a slew, I believe, of interviews at the time and was very open about saying for the money. Yeah,
Brian Cox gives no fucks. Mm. It's great. Okay, that is it for news. Should we move on to the review section?
Please.
Let's do that. And we begin this week back in thorny territory, specifically Jack Thorny territory with Netflix's Toxic Town. And this is the first part of this week's Joe Dempsey double bill. Mm-hmm. This one dramatises the true story of the Corby toxic waste case, where the reclamation of an old steel plant led to the poisoning of a town. Specifically here, how it affected a group of expectant mothers. Kay, you talked this one up quite a bit the other week, so why don't you kick us off?
Yeah, this is really good. This is Jack Thorne. I mean, heartland territory of Jack Thorne, you know, taking on a social justice issue, which is that there was this big environmental scandal in Corby, which I had no idea about. I don't know about you guys, how aware you were of it, the poisonings. But essentially, it's about the fact that the steelworks that used to be there, when they shut down, eventually there was a regeneration project that happened. And unbeknownst to all the people living there, they were being poisoned by, you know, the toxins from the steelworks. And it affected a lot of people, particularly unborn children. And it's really a devastating story, and it's very emotional to see it play out. And it's been done with the permission of the mothers involved. They've worked with Jack, and they were interviewed by the research team. So it gives a really authentic portrayal of how it must have been. So Jodie Whittaker plays real-life Susan McIntyre, whose baby Connor was born with a deformed hand, and who later, thanks to a journalist, made the connection between the steelworks, the dust from the steelworks, and the health issues of the children. And she wages the campaign against the council, you know, being kind of Erin Brockovich type figure for Corby. We should say that each of the mothers, their partners worked either as part of the regeneration program. So that's the connection, is that. And we see that, like, one of the mothers, I can't remember which one now, sorry, but she, when the partner comes back from working, you know, they do take some precautions in that they dust off the clothes outside, you know, they change outside of the houses. But what they don't realize, they're still ingesting all this air. the reason why I was so excited about this as well is that Amy Lou Wood is in it, and she is fantastic as a first-time mum, Tracy, Tracy Taylor, who has been desperate to get pregnant. She's, I think, newly married. And yeah, she's devastated as well by the consequences, which we won't spoil. Also, Claudia Jesse is in it as Maggie Mann, who also was affected. Her child was affected by it. So I just think it's just been really well done, sensitively handled, and is very powerful. Like, especially, you know, if you know the story, which I know a lot of people will do, but for those who don't, it's very educational as well, and hopefully will lead to people learning lessons. And the thing, sorry, the other thing just to say that I found interesting, this is through reading the press pack that went with this, is that Jack Thorne is really keen not to condemn anyone, because Brendan Coyle plays Roy Thomas, who is a council member who ignores safety measures because he's so determined to regenerate the area and create more jobs.
Downton's Brendan Coyle.
Mm. Yes, indeed. Who does he play?
Mr. Bates.
That's it. Smug Mr. Bates.
Who comes from Corby.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. Mm. I didn't know that. But Jack doesn't want to, you know, condemn him for that, because it was well-intentioned, you know.
Have you watched the whole series?
No.
Okay, well, all I'd say is he's pretty well condemned.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I read that and I thought,
right. That's,
yeah. There's an amazing scene where he's absolutely condemned, and it's very fantastic.
But even from the first episode, he comes across as well-dodge.
Yeah. He really does, yeah.
But you think the motive is like kind of honourable in a way, because they're trying to create you know, income for the people of Corby who have been left stranded, you know, when the steel mines, the steelworks shut down.
But it's interesting that his character, Brendan Coyle's character, is not a real person. So what he's what he's done is, Jack Thorne, which I think is a masterstroke, is the main characters of the women are real people. They are real individual people. And Jodie Whittaker and Amy Lou Wood met their respective real people that they're playing and stuck.
It's got their seal of approval.
Got their seal of approval, etc. But the villains of the piece, in quotes, which are definitely, I think Jack, in a way, has to say what he said about them, but he's very deliberately and cleverly made them amalgams of real people. So they're not based on specific individuals, because there would be huge legal implications if there were, because they are up to no good. Because you've got him, Brendan Coyle, who is brilliant as that councillor, who's a kind of politician. He's a Blairite politician. And there's almost a kind of political element to this whole thing, whole story, I think, which is that kind of like middling kind of Labour politics has at various points gone wrong, you know, and this is an example of local politics gone wrong. And he is trying to do the right thing, as you say, but so single-minded about it, they refuse to look at the actual reality of the situation, if you like, that particularly the councillor. And he's also in a very, very close-knit relationship with the businessman played by Ben Batt, Pat Miller, whose company is the one who's sorting out the waste, the toxic waste from the reclaimed steel plant, and is responsible for essentially poisoning these poor women and what's happened to their kids. So it definitely, I feel it's a really angry piece of campaigning TV. It is Mr. Bates versus the post office all over again. And what Jack Thorne's also acknowledged is I heard him, where he's talking about how, you know, jealous all dramatists who work on true stories are of that show for, you know, telling the public in detail about an incredible scandal. I mean, obviously, there are still people who've yet to be paid their compensation, unbelievably, in the post office scandal. But as a piece of powerful, transformative TV, Mr. Bates versus the Post Office was incredible. I think this is on the same level. I think it's absolutely brilliant piece of dramatization of a true story with a fierce anger burning in it for what's happened to these women. And I think I watched the whole thing all in one go, pretty much. And I think it gets more and more kind of, at the same time, shocking and inspirational, because the women played by Jodie Whittaker and Amy Lou Wood, who are phenomenal, both of them. Jodie Whittaker, I mean, I've always loved her. I loved her pre Doctor Who.
Venus.
She immerses herself in every role she's ever done. But you completely forget her after 5 minutes. She's so immersive in this role of this kind of Scottish firebrand woman who takes no shit from the various people in her life, including her ridiculous
partner
played by Michael Socha.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Exactly.
He
is a piece of work. Right. So, almost unlike Mr. Bates, there are like his character is infuriating, as is Brendan Coyle's character. character. And I think it helps make this drama even more, or not even more impressive, but even, but kind of unbelievable, like, or something like a thriller meets a courtroom drama, because the fourth episode is like the actual trial. And that's like an incredibly exciting, thrilling courtroom drama. And Jack Thorne deploys, I think, a lot of the techniques of drama and film that we've seen many times before, but to an incredibly powerful effect. I thought it was so clever how he's created this story. And when you talked about it, in fact, I remember, and you know, I got you to write about it for Heat, and I was aware of this thing. I was thinking, do I really need to, can I really endure, you know, a series about such a distressing, shocking scandal, these poor women and their poor kids that are affected. I mean, Amy Lou plays a character whose child died. I mean, that's, you know, and that, and she's so incredible in those scenes dealing with that.
But you can endure it because it's inspiring.
Well, exactly. Well, more than that, it is inspiring. But he tells it with the humour, because coming out of the character, particularly Jodie Whittaker's character, she's really funny. Mm. The way she deals with everything in her life is kind of funny with a sense of humour. And her bond with Amy Lou Wood is so brilliantly done. And the two of them together are funny as well. They're almost like keeping each other going. And it reminds you that no matter how bad things get in life, essentially, people all do maintain a sense of humour. At least British people do, and these people do. And so it's funny. It's kind of thrilling because you want to know how it all ends up. Because I didn't know I knew of the case, but I didn't know the detail of it. And then there's an incredibly enraging, satisfying sense of justice. Mm. Without, you know,
no spoilers.
No, but it is. It is a real story. I guarantee, if you start watching this after 5-10 minutes, you'll want to carry on and you want to see it through to the end. So I think it's brilliant.
And you're right. You do forget the actors are playing these characters.
Yeah.
They just become them.
She's phenomenal. I mean, she's in the middle of The White Lotus, Amy Lou Wood. You could not get two more different projects, right? The beauty, slick beauty, luxury of The White Lotus, and this, the grit of Corby and her character. But she's such a delight in both. She's so brilliant. She must be one of the most likable actresses working today. Yeah. So I'm completely...
Props to them at one point, like, for driving this home, no pun intended. There is a bit where they are racing trucks full of toxic waste.
Yeah.
Joe Dempsey's driving it.
Yeah.
And I cannot emphasise this enough, they are doing it to a song by The Chemical Brothers. It's on the nose, but it's very good.
There's a lot of on the nose stuff going on, but completely justified.
It works very, very well. Yeah. But again, it's just because the point they're making is they were transporting this toxic waste in like open trucks and it was sloshing out and going everywhere. And there's a sense where this differs from Mr. Bates versus the Post Office is that there was a sense that people didn't fully understand what that was.
Yeah.
And it was educating them on, this is an awful thing that happened. You don't know anything about this, but oh my God, it's worse than you could possibly imagine. Like, no one is, I think, under any illusions that toxic waste is bad, but this actually was an important case.
Sorry, that's such a funny sentence. No one's under any illusions that toxic waste is bad.
We're all fairly sure it's bad. No, but like even Aaron Brockovich was about pollution, but that crucially it's about water supplies, isn't it? No, nearly always it was water supplies, and this was toxic waste kind of in the air and in the environment. So it was a slightly different thing to these kind of class action suits that had come before it and whatnot. It is something slightly different. But yeah, I think you're right. It's anchored in the performances, I think, more than anything, and the human story that's there.
I thought it was just so interesting that, he has acknowledged the power, as I mentioned earlier, Jack Thorne, of Mr. Bates and how jealous he is of, you know, of that show in a way. But I think he's created something just as good. But there's a very similar scene, you know, in Mr. Bates, there's a scene where the first public meeting where they've tried to promote what's happened to these postmasters, and they get loads more people than they expect flooding into the pub where they have the meeting. And he does the same thing in this. There's a scene where for the first time they invite people to join them who've been affected, they think might be affected, and loads more people than they expect come in. And I thought that was almost like, I haven't heard from him or spoken to him or know if he has, but that felt like a tribute almost to the very similar moment in Mr. Bates.
So weirdly, because this has Brendan Coyle in it, this is actually Mr. Bates versus the environmentalists.
Exactly, very good. Yeah. The other thing I was going to say, I genuinely don't know what the answer to this is, but the difference, of course, between these two series is that Mr. Bates was on ITV1 primetime. Millions and millions of people, literally like 7, 8, 9 million people, watched it live. Is it going to have the same impact on Netflix? This is. I watched it and I thought, should this be on ITV? Should it be on Channel 4? Should it be on BBC?
I think it should be on ITV.
It's weird, isn't it? Because there's no reason why it shouldn't be on ITV. And it's almost like Netflix have gone out there and gone, we want our Mr. Bates. I mean, I've no idea if this is the case. It may have gone into production before Mr. Bates. I don't know. But it could have been, couldn't it? And I wonder whether the impact might be slightly...
I think it would have done very well on ITV.
It would have been done huge, yeah. But I wonder whether the impact might be slightly affected by the fact that obviously not everyone has got Netflix. Everyone assumes that everyone's got Netflix, but they haven't.
No, that's true.
So I don't know. I don't know if I've got the answer to that. I hope it has a similar impact because it's absolutely phenomenal, I think.
Toxic Town, then, on Netflix. When, Boydie?
Well, it will be on by the time this comes out, I believe.
Yes,
so,
it will.
Yes.
It will. So now. Now the answer now. You can watch it all now.
Streaming now on the Netflix.
Streaming now. Next up this week, we have Get Millie Black, a series created by author Marlon James, which sees Tamara Lawrence as Millie Jean Black, an officer in the Met who leaves to return to Kingston, Jamaica to become an officer there, only for Joe Dempsey to unexpectedly turn up, something I think we can all relate to this week. Boydie, did you get Millie Black?
Yes. Yes, I did, fully. As you say, Tamara Lawrence, who's the spelling, by the way, of Tamara's last name is going to be misspelled, I feel, in by many, many people for the rest of time because it's two A's. You may think it's Lawrence, but it's
Lawrence.
Not. It's Lawrence. Yes. So she joins, you know, the likes of Gordon Kay. Remember Gordon Kay and Hello, Hello, whose
yes,
name was G-O-R-D-E-N. And so many people routinely would get
and
that
Kay
wrong.
And Kay with an E, wasn't it?
Yeah, oh, the whole thing. It was the Gordon. It was not Gordon, it was Gordon. People get their vowels wrong. So I'm just saying to people, just focus tomorrow. Lawrence, two A's. That's not the most important thing about the show, don't worry. But she plays the title role of Millie Black. And the idea is that she's forced out of Scotland Yard. You don't really know why to start with. It starts with her voiceover explaining how she was brought up in Jamaica and she had a younger brother who was kind of, and they were both kind of abused by their mother. And she starts by explaining that. And then the kind of story jumps to her living in Jamaica as a detective. And she works with her detective partner, Curtis, played by the great Gershwin Eustace Jr., who viewers might know from Joan. She was in that, she was Joan with Sophie Turner.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and he's a great man because I did a Q&A with him in the cast and he was really funny and interesting. And he plays this secretly gay detective partner. And they are investigating the disappearance of a young girl who's like a 14-year-old. And it gets into the real underbelly of Kingston, Jamaica. There's a bit of town where the kind of all of the sex workers work, a lot of whom are trans, and one of the main characters turns out to be a trans woman as well, interestingly. Then Joe Dempsey arrives later. As you said, it's the week of Joe Dempsey.
It is.
Fair enough. And he brings in a whole different kind of element of the story, really, because he wants to take back one of this kind of famous gangster figure who we don't really know and see yet, in episode one at least, back to London, where he's investigating a case that this character is connected to. This is all about, for me, the texture and the whole kind of style of the show.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very seductive view of this place. It really does. I'm trying to avoid the horrendous cliche that I hate when people say that the setting itself is like a character. But it really is in this particular
case. Well, it's a real flavour.
It's so vividly drawn. Yeah. You can smell it almost, like the kind of the whole area and what it means. I also think he's just kind of, Marlon James just casually dropped in loads of kind of LGBTQIA characters in a very, in a way that doesn't announce itself. It just happens to be the case. And I think that's really interesting, the way that how inclusive it is, this story. She is just brilliant. This is like, you know, Tamara Lawrence. She's fantastic in it. You may remember she was in Mr. Loverman as thank you. You loved doing that, didn't you? as one of Lily James's sisters, you recognize her. And she was brilliant in Mr. Loverman. She's brilliant in this. Sometimes I find there's a lot of voiceover. And but that actually is kind of partly a tribute to the inspiration of the show. Because this is a kind of a detective, noir detective show. This is, you know, the voiceover is like, feels like it's influenced by, you know, Raymond Chandler characters from years gone by and film noirs from the 40s and 50s and stuff. So it's kind of like a mixture of that genre with that voiceover working very effectively. Because it's a kind of fascinating, witty, intriguing voiceover combined with an incredibly contemporary vision of what's going on in these characters' lives and what it's like in Jamaica. I thought it was fantastic. It's already been on HBO, interestingly.
It has,
This is a Channel 4 production, but it was aired on HBO late last year to very, very good reviews, quite rightly. I think it's really, really good.
It's very personal for Marlon James as well, because Millie Black is based on his mother,
That's
who was
right.
a police officer as well.
Yes.
And how many episodes have you seen?
Only one.
Apparently each episode has a different sort of central character, as it were. Each one has a slightly different viewpoint. I mean, she's obviously the main character throughout, but everyone has a slightly different perspective, which I think is a really interesting way of structuring this. But yeah, it's really good. But as you say, the place and the journey that you go on in that first episode, so from Jamaica to London, from her career, then back to Jamaica, and there's the thread of her brother, who she thought was dead, who is not dead, but she's searching for missing, you know, she works missing people. And then Joe Dempsey turns up from the Met to Jamaica, so it all gets quite knotty.
Yeah.
And then that first episode, because it's quite, you know, it's police, it's investigation, it's whatnot, it's quite, you know, measured. And then that first episode just kind of explodes in the last 2 minutes. And you're just like, oh my God, like this has stepped up.
Yeah, there's a brilliant action sequence,
Right. So and you're just like, okay, well now I have to know what happens next.
It's really, absolutely. It's really well done. And it's got a brilliant title sequence and theme song, by the way, as well, just on top of everything.
Okay. I really, really liked it. I watched two episodes. I couldn't stop watching it. I like it because it feels really refreshing and new compared to all the other portrayals we've seen of the Caribbean. Specifically Death in Paradise, for example, right? But, you know, you see that kind of very technicolor, glossy, beautiful beaches, palm trees view of it. And this is really the, as you said, the gritty, grimy underbelly of Kingston, Jamaica, and the criminal element. I thought it was really interesting for it to portray the way that the gay characters treated. And in fact, like when I researched, I didn't realize, I did know this, but I'd forgotten that it's illegal to be gay in Jamaica. So much so that I read that, you know, just even holding hands in a bedroom could be like result in hard labor, and which is seems insane. But I really like the fact that it goes there, and it's just this really authentic, you know, depiction of what it's like in Jamaica, and the fact that, you know, it's kind of like the anger is there about. Rightfully so, about the colonialism and slavery, and the fact that Joe Dempsey's character comes in, you know. and to be fair to, you know, it's not a stereotypical portrayal of the, you know, the white detective that comes to Jamaica and he's throwing his weight about, because he's quite a subtle, you know, he's respectful and he's sort of biding his time. But Millie Black rightfully is just like, oh, you think your case is more important, and she's really angry about it. And I love what, you know, the subtext of that is. I thought it was brilliant.
They did address the fact that it's kind of the anti-Death in Paradise, if you like. I read an interview with Marlon James where he says, James personally has nothing against that long-running cozy crime drama set on the idealised island of St. Marie. He says, I think Caribbean comfort food is always welcome. I think it's a good line. Yes.
Get Millie Black then. Which lands? On Channel 4.
Channel 4.
Channel number 4.
Channel number 4, Wednesday and Thursday, 5th and 6th of March, 9 p.m. 2024.
25. Wow. They did it last year on HBO, but, you know. Yeah, last year on HBO?
It was last year on HBO. Okay. Yeah.
Everyone should watch it, please.
Everyone should watch it.
Well, everyone should watch Toxic Town as well.
Yes. It's been a good week for TV.
We've got another show to review.
Maybe everyone should watch this as well.
Oh my God. Right. Finally, this week, we have Fear, which is a three-part thriller set in Glasgow based on the novel by Dirk Kirby-White. This stars Martin Compton and Anjali Mohindra as a couple who move into a lovely Glaswegian period property with their kids, apparently without checking first to see whether there was a creepy man living in the basement. Things you should always do when buying a home. Okay, fine. Things don't go well. I think it's fair to say there. Kay, did you feel the fear?
Oh my God, did I feel the fear? Yes, I did. I am a nervy person, that should be said from the outset, but throughout this whole thing, I felt sick. Every single step of the way, I felt so nervous.
In a good way?
In a good way. Okay. It's so good. We've three great shows this week, and I'd highly recommend all of them for different reasons, but this one is such an intense psychological thriller, and I think it is based on the book by Dirk, but also on his own experience. So this happened to
you're
him
deliberately only referring to him by his first name, because you don't want to attempt
you don't even want to go so near his surname.
You don't want to attempt his surname.
Dirk.
Why
my mate
you?
Dirk.
K-U-R-B.
Why would you expose me like that?
Listeners, it's spelled K-U-R-B-J-U-W-E-I-T. Now, I went
with Kirby White. I have no idea if that is accurate.
Kirby
I just rolled the dice.
Yeah. I mean, what are the chances of me getting that right? I didn't want to do Dirk.
Not high.
Anyway, Dirk.
Your mate Dirk.
But yeah, based on his own experiences with his family, which makes it even more chilling when you watch it.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, exactly.
No, really?
Yes.
Wow, I didn't know that either. That's it's, extraordinary.
Yeah, so he had a neighbour who lived below and who tormented his family and all the things. Yeah, a lot of it is based on his own experience, which makes it, as I say, more terrifying. And it does such a great job of, like, it's down to the scripts and obviously the performances. It does such a great job of ratcheting up the tension. And from the offset, it just immerses you in this situation, which is that they move, as you say, into this gorgeous property porn house, and underneath they've got this neighbor, and it makes you think about your own judgments and what you do in that situation and your perspective on it. Because when I saw the guy, I know it sounds bad, I was like, oh, okay, he's a wrong'un. And then yeah, which is really bad. And then instantly I was like, no, he's just probably a bit socially awkward.
Yeah, he turned up with pizza. That's normally a pretty good sign.
No, but he wasn't reading social cues. But then I thought, oh, maybe he's just an awkward person who doesn't, you know, get it. Because like he lingers a bit too long and stuff like that. And I was like, no, he's just a bit lonely. But very rapidly you begin to realise, no, actually something more sinister is going on. But you think about it from each perspective, because even when the wife, played by Anjali Mahindra, she's very friendly and chatty. And, you know, there are points where you're kind of, well, I was kind of like, oh, my God, please do not engage with him. Do not. But you get it, because she's just being a polite neighbor to him and reciprocating, you know, his generosity in terms of like food offerings. And you can see why, you know, Martin Compton's character gets a bit cross at first, because he's thinking...
Although he's a raging bellend.
Yes, he is.
And it's actually interesting the way that's played as well, because from the very first sort of almost scene you see him, he's being a cock.
Yeah.
And like when he's introduced to Jan, who's the dodgy neighbour downstairs, like he belittles his job, he kind of boosts his own job, and he's just quite overtly rude, but no one comments on it or mentions it. And you're a bit like, was that just me or are you an asshole?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, you know, you're completely right. He's got a massive ego and he's going through his own stuff at work, and it's a pressure cooker situation for him. Yeah. So, and he takes it out on Jan. But I think I'm referring to the instance where he has a go at him for something that Jan does, which I could see why someone would react like that. Jan's very much crossed a line. But I really like how they...
He definitely crosses the line. Sorry.
Just a bit.
Yeah. But you can see why Martin lashed out. But you're completely right. Martin is an arsehole in this. And... and he does he says these things that are designed to reduce Jan and to make him feel small, but he needn't bother because Jan is like, he's got his own issues. And I love how it's seen that the way he tracks the family via the floorboards, it's so sinister, and the pipes and stuff like that. It creeps you out and makes you think about, you know, there's a certain way he does. Monitor them, which makes you think about your own living arrangements. Let's just
say, God help anyone who lives in flats or any kind of shared accommodation, because it is quite upsetting, and the whole thing is extremely stressful.
It's so tense.
I must admit, I found this almost unbearable. Like it took all of my willpower to get through it. I dreaded watching it because I knew it was going to be like this. And I struggled. It's only three episodes. I couldn't watch a second episode of this if you paid me. I found it so overwhelmingly stressful,
but
the whole thing.
James, I felt similarly. I was like, oh my God. Like each second I was like, oh my God, I just need it to be over, because I was so tense.
Yeah.
But then I desperately want to know what happens next. That's
I know what you mean. I know exactly
so
what you
well
mean.
Written.
You do want to know what happens, but it's just so hard because it is so... And I think it's because there's something inherently stressful about that being brought into your home environment, like the safe space, your safe space, and their safe space is violated by this guy. Mm. I will say there is a plot point here where his brother mentions to him, oh, you spent all this money on this huge house. Why'd you spend all this money on this house? I put it to you, if I had a significant amount of money to spend on a lovely period property, I might, I don't know, check if there was a mentalist living in the basement. it feels like that's due diligence when you buy a house, right? That seems fair.
And sorry, what is your test for doing that exactly? Do you get them to do it like a questionnaire? Are you crazy?
But honestly, my point is almost like, why would you buy that house if there was a strange man living in the basement? Like, it feels like, regardless of whether or not
he's... he was strange, but the point of it is, I suppose, that I would buy a property that didn't have someone living
in the basement. And the point is, and he makes that passive aggressive passive comment, oh, you're living in the servants' quarters, which was immediately a demeaning thing to say.
Yeah.
But so it's a large house and they're living in the house proper, but there is...
huge.
Yeah, and there's a servants' quarters down in the basement and this is where this guy lives.
Yeah.
I feel like if you could afford that large house, you'd maybe go for one that didn't have someone living in the basement. That's just me.
Yeah, I think it's a fair point. Yeah, I think what is weird is, right, Martin Comston, by my calculations, has been in three house-based...
Our house,
remember, people suddenly had bought his house without his knowledge. He was in The Nest, where he was in that spectacular house on the Scottish coast.
I was going to call it The Cuckoo, The Nest.
With Mirren Mack as the mother from hell, the would-be mother from hell, and now he's in this. It is quite weird. And this, I mean, I know it's not, there's no point in him anyway. I talked about, you know, whether the show, whether Toxic Town, it's weird that it's on Netflix, you know, it could have been on ITV. Mm. I mean, this could have been, this is
100%.
Solid. 100%. Yeah. ITV1, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, stripped across the week, and it's on Prime Video. And it is, it just makes you think, you know, there's nothing wrong with it. There's no reason why it shouldn't be on Prime Video. And his previous show, The Rig, was on Prime Video as well.
Yeah.
The Rig was like a big special effects, you know, kind of more genre project.
But for a streaming show, it was quite, you know, restrained in terms of its budget.
But The Rig wasn't an ITV1 show, right?
No,
this is solid. No. This absolutely 100%, as it is, could be on ITV. Now, there's no value judgment on my part. I really enjoyed it. I find it really entertaining. I'm not finding it as scary as you. I'm finding it very good, really good fun. I think it's...
That's because you're hard as nails and you live in a penthouse. You're never going to have to worry about this.
Yeah, basically.
Like we,
I haven't got,
like
I,
us
I have,
mortals.
I haven't got a creepy neighbour living in my basement. I don't have a basement. But
it's... Then you've got a dungeon.
But it's, you know, everything about it is perfectly suited to being on a huge mainstream terrestrial, as we used to call them, TV channel. But it's just interesting.
Well, presumably some people like me will watch it.
Right. Well, this is getting to my point.
Snobs
who think streaming TV is inherently superior to your everyday, we'll watch this because of that. But it could 100% everything about it could be on ITV. But it's really gripping.
It's a quality drama.
Of course it's quality drama. Yeah, but ITV is quality drama.
Yes, so
week
I'm
in, week
to
out.
James.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And in fact, Playing Nice is another show it really reminded me of, because Playing Nice has the similar situation where the accusations that are leveled in this show and that show are similar, involving children, etc. So it is, which was one of the classic ITV primetime dramas of our time in terms of being whack and slight guilty pleasure. In fact, a lot of people thought it was, remember, that's got a 1-star review in The Guardian. I wonder what this will get.
Let's
I'd be interested to see.
It.
Let's skip over that. But I really enjoyed it. I love Marty Comster playing a bit of a bell end, as you say, maybe more of a bit. Quite a bell end.
Yeah.
She's great, Ashley Mahindra, and the creepy guy is really, really creepy. To be fair to him. I'm really enjoying it, and I'll be interested to see what Solly McLeod, he plays the creepy guy.
This is going to be right. So this is basically like a brilliant, immersive, chilling psychological thriller. Right. It's the kind of show that you will watch, and then you'll instantly want to discuss with your friends. Like I can imagine Claire Sheldon watching it and talking about it at work across the desk of like
exactly as Playing Nice, which was very similar.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly.
We should also mention Cosmo Jarvis is in this as well as Martin Comston's dad.
Not James Cosmo.
Did I Cosmo Jarvis? I did it. I just did the thing.
Yes.
Do you know what? We're leaving this in.
Yes.
I've done it. It's not Cosmo Jarvis. It's James Cosmo. Yeah.
From the train show.
The benefit, of course, is that I've just said it in front of you two and not, in fact, in front of James Cosmo.
Yeah. Thank you for bringing up my Achilles heel.
James Cosmo. That's absolutely right. But also Daniel Portman, Padraig Payne, another Game of Thrones alumnus.
Completely. And all the cast are really good. And that scene with James Cosmo.
Cosmo Jarvis, whichever you prefer.
All I'll say is the scene with James Cosmo and the gun is really interesting.
Yeah, it is. Because there's a whole backstory to Martin's character.
Yeah.
He's a complex character. He's got a lot of issues, a lot of things going on.
Yes, he does.
It's written by, we should say, Mick Ford, who is I do like Mick Ford's stuff. He's really, he wrote After the Flood, that which is coming back to the other issue.
Oh, with the music.
With the music, another notorious ITV one. Primetime drama, James did have issues.
I did have issues with that. If it had been on Prime, I'd probably given it a free pass.
Of course,
If you do like this show, I would say it's worth Googling Dirk, as I like to call him, because...
Well, now you've said apparently it's based on his real life,
He's done, I think, an interview with The Guardian of when it was first published, and it's fascinating.
Wow. No, I will have a look.
Fear, then. Not on ITV, but on Prime Video.
Yes. Tuesday, the 4th of March, 2024, which is also unusual. Prime Video, it's very much a Friday.
I'm fixated on these things at the moment, aren't you?
Well, you know, this isn't what I do, Kay. I'm fascinated by the whole world of television.
What else is out this week?
A lot. The Bay is back. Now, this is the fifth series of the Morecambe set crime drama. It actually starts as this comes out on the Sunday, the 2nd of March, because originally The Bay and another drama of the week, which is A Cruel Love, the Ruth Ellis story, they swapped over. This is fascinating. This is fascinating insight into scheduling here, right here, listeners. James is literally like falling asleep. But I thought about
power nap time.
Yeah. But The Bay was originally going to be in the middle of the week on ITV. And then A Cruel Love, the Ruth Ellis story, which was going to be on Sunday. Then they swapped them around. So The Bay started already. The fist. I like The Bay. I think it's really good.
It used to have Morven Christie in it, and
And now it's Marsha Thomason. So that will have started already, but that's a fun show. And then on Wednesday on ITV1, you've got A Cruel Love, the Ruth Ellis story, which is the story of the last woman to be hanged in this country. And I've watched it because I thought we might, well, I wrote about it for here and I thought we might end up reviewing it. I think it's really good, the Ruth Ellis story. Lucy Boynton plays her, and she is a revelation. She's absolutely brilliant. As Ruth Ellis is a really interesting figure because she ran her own nightclub in London and she kind of was like a ahead of her time, sexually free, shall we say, woman who was punished. That's, you know, by her horrendous abusive boyfriend, and that's why she killed him. And it was an open and shut case. But it's really interesting to see what happened with her representatives, with her as a human being, and talking about the sexual kind of mores of the time. It's a really interesting show. So that's my mini review of which you weren't expecting of A Cruel Love, the Ruth Ellis story.
Are you going to give us another one of Power Book 3, Raising Canaan Season 4?
I haven't watched that. No. And that's on like MGM Plus, is that what
it is on
it
MGM
now?
Plus, yes, yeah. That's right. That's not the big show of the week, though.
No. Daredevil, yes. Born Again.
Yes.
Which Kay is particularly, as a fan
so
of the
excited.
MCU.
She's so excited.
She cannot wait. Now, of course, Daredevil had its own series on back in the day. Remember Netflix had all the Marvel characters, didn't they? And they would do like 13 episode runs of
too long.
Too long tediousness. This is only 8, I think.
The tediousness is back. Yeah. No. So this is Daredevil, Born Again. This is a resurrected Charlie Cox as this character. He's now officially part of the MCU. It does land on Disney Plus. It's on Wednesday. We will be talking about this on Thursday's Pilot Plus.
You'd be Kay
is thrilled to say.
Particularly delighted
I might
to
be sick next week.
There's a, what, like physically sick?
Yeah, okay. Off pod.
Steady. There's The Leopard, which is a massive Netflix Italian production of one of the biggest selling Italian novels of all time. It was a legendary film in 1963 starring Burt Lancaster, James, which I'm sure you know all about. That's quite a big, but that was not available to review. That's, what day is that, did I say? Wednesday, Netflix. You can hear me flicking the pages as we speak. I think that's about it. Is there anything else that I've forgotten?
Maybe? No, I think that's broadly it for this week.
Yeah.
This is going to be a tricky question I'm going to pose to you now. What is your pick of the week? You can only have one.
So
that is quite tricky.
Kay, putting you on the spot.
Okay.
Pick one. And it means that you love it and you hate the other two.
No.
Go for it.
Listeners should watch all three because they're all
cop out.
Great. No, but I'm going to pick one.
No. Just one, as is your wand.
Yes. Get Millie Black.
Get Millie Black.
Boy. Toxic Town for me.
Ooh.
For sure. I think it's, phenomenal.
I found Fear absolutely excruciating, so I cannot possibly pick that. It would be Toxic Town for me as well, I think.
Yeah. Mm. Good.
Well, that is it for this week's show. We hope you enjoyed that. Please do leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. And while you're on Apple Podcasts, keep an eye out for Pilot Plus, which is coming to Apple Podcasts, and give us your money as well. Thank you very much. Follow us on social media at Boyd Hilton, at Kara Barra, at James C. Dyer, and of course at Pilot TV Pod. And we're on the subreddit as well, on the Reddits. Find us on the Reddits. Next week, there are exciting things. Dope Thief comes to Apple TV Plus. That is an exciting show. Adolescence is coming next week as well, which Boydie has already mentioned, which is a very stressful show. But more important than either of those things, The Wheel of Time returns for its anticipated third season.
Isn't that embargoed?
In particular, is very excited.
We don't
know yet. I will find out when they give me the episodes tomorrow.
James has given me special dispensation.
Special dispensation to not watch.
Yes.
I remember, and that's confoundingly confusing.
Come on,
it's got so many funny names in it. Aswalea.
The Aes Sedai. Yeah, it's great. It's great stuff.
No.
No.
Seaside R, Kay. Seaside R.
You don't want to hear my response to this.
Amazing. Okay, fine. I think Kay's off for another power nap. Pilot out.